Thank you, Your Honors. Catherine Hopping on behalf of Colorado Steakhouse, the appellant. My attorney registration number is 35036. I'm going to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal, but I can keep track of my own time. When a trial court judge sits in a case interpreting contracts, there are specific rules governing that process and a structure of decision making. In this case, the trial court did not follow those rules, did not do what the law requires, and the results of this failure permeate both major findings of the trial court, that the contract at issue was ambiguous and that a mutual mistake was made. The trial court failed to follow well-established law governing contract interpretation when it determined that the sublease at issue in this case was ambiguous. Importantly, this court is not bound by the trial court's decision on the ambiguity of the sublease. The trial court improperly considered extrinsic evidence in determining that the sublease was ambiguous as to whether or not the north patio was given to Colorado Steakhouse when paragraph 3 of the sublease clearly provided for it. Colorado law governing contract interpretation is clear. The intent of the parties, as expressed in the words they have employed, governs. A trial court cannot consider extrinsic evidence unless the contract is ambiguous. Intent is to be determined from the contract itself and not extrinsic evidence unless it is impossible to reconcile the provisions of the contract. If the provisions of a written instrument can possibly be given effect without one contradicting another, then a contract is not ambiguous. There is a presumption that a signed contract is valid and that it represents the agreement of the parties, and the trial court is under an obligation to give effect to all provisions of the contract if it's at all possible. A good example of this is KN Energy. In KN Energy, Supreme Court 1985 determined that a contract was unambiguous and refused to consider extrinsic evidence of the party's intent, even though KN Energy argued that the provision contained contradicting terms. The Supreme Court declined to hear the party's expressions of intent and determined that the provisions of that contract could be read together. Here, the trial court ignored Colorado law and erroneously considered extrinsic evidence in making the determination that the sublease was ambiguous as to whether or not it provided for the north patio. It's undisputed that Exhibit A says nothing about the north patio. The north patio is not depicted on Exhibit A one way or the other. Galena could have handwritten in the word yes where the north patio should have been, could have handwritten in the word no where the north patio should have been, but it did not. Exhibit A says nothing about it. Instead, it's clearly provided for in the text of paragraph 3, which states the tenant shall have exclusive use of the north patio. Exhibit A and paragraph 3 don't contradict. They complement each other. And the only way for the trial court to conclude otherwise is by pervasive reference to extrinsic evidence, which is not permissible, but it's what the trial court did here. In its final order, the trial court went through a litany of extrinsic evidence before determining that the sublease was ambiguous and considered the party's own expressions of intent in considering whether the sublease provided the north patio. In fact, in determining that the sublease was ambiguous on page 8 of its order, the trial court specifically asserted what it perceived to be Galena's position, that Exhibit A controls, and that since Exhibit A did not include the north patio, there was no breach. Here, the trial court heard all the evidence, knew what the legal standard was, and instead applied its own ad hoc standard of what made the most sense based upon the extrinsic evidence of Galena's intent. Galena's position was clearly a factor in the trial court's determination of ambiguity because the trial court determined that ambiguity existed because Mr. Mazza marked yes in certain areas of Exhibit A, but failed to mark yes on the north patio. This conclusion cannot be reached without considering extrinsic evidence of Mr. Mazza's testimony.
Is Exhibit A incorporated into the contract?
Yes, it was.
So it can be used to interpret the contract?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, Exhibit A and paragraph 3 are both part of the contract. There's no dispute that Exhibit A was attached to the lease as Exhibit A, and it depicted all.
So there is a difference between Exhibit A and paragraph 3.
I don't disagree that
the and the court could use that difference in interpreting the contract, could it not?
I don't believe that there is necessary.
I'm finding an ambiguity.
I don't believe that there's a difference. I believe that there's a difference. I don't believe that there's a contradiction. I believe that the two complement each other. Just because something is provided in one portion of the contract, but not in another portion of the contract, doesn't mean that those two provisions contradict.
Ms. Hobby, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Sure.
Doesn't this turn on just one word, the word also?
Let me
play out my thoughts because I'd like to hear from opposing counsel on the same issue. Exhibit A is not, I mean, there's no language to say that that Exhibit A is the exclusive premises or anything like that. There's no indication of the north patio in Exhibit A. And the line following reference to Exhibit A in the contract says, tenants shall also have exclusive use of the north-facing patio. Doesn't that word also carry the day here?
Your Honor, I believe it does. I believe that Exhibit A was never meant to be controlling. It was never meant to be, to assume everything that
Colorado There's nothing State in the contract that says Exhibit A is controlling.
There's nothing in the contract that says that Exhibit A was controlling. And in testimony, I directed that question specifically to Mr. Mazza, and he testified that he believed that Exhibit A and Paragraph 3 could, in fact, be read together. And legally, they must be done so. And specifically...
Let me have a follow-up question. And again, I'd like to hear from opposing counsel. What does the word also mean?
In addition... Besides,
okay.
Something in addition to what was provided. The very next sentence after reference to Exhibit A is tenants shall also have exclusive use of the north-facing patio. That doesn't contradict what's in Exhibit A. Exhibit A was never meant to be controlling. In fact, there's no furniture, there's no fixtures and equipment.
So if Exhibit A, I guess hypothetically, would have had north patio on it with the word no beside it, we would have a different issue here.
I believe that's correct. And Mr. Mazza did go through the rigmarole of going through and marking out no in certain areas of that Exhibit A that he said did not belong.
And it's undisputed the north patio was not on that exhibit, nor did it have a no if it's not on the exhibit.
That's correct. The trial court could have just as easily come to the determination that the two complement each other as opposed to contradict each other. And in fact, the trial court is legally under an obligation to try to reconcile all provisions of the contract before you determine whether or not it's ambiguous. And that is evident in addition in the court's determination in Petco, where the court looked to other provisions of that contract to resolve the issue of the ambiguity, and because other provisions couldn't resolve it, then the court was allowed to look to extrinsic evidence. But here, there is no ambiguity. Colorado Statehouse was provided everything that was provided in the text of the contract in addition to what it was provided in Exhibit A. And it's not unusual for contracts in different provisions in different parts to provide different things.
And that wasn't a mutual mistake from your client's position?
From our position, absolutely not. If the contract is determined to be unambiguous, then the only remedy is reformation through mutual mistake. And in this case, the law requires that evidence to be clear, unequivocal, and indubitable. And again, the trial court substituted its own judgment for that and determined on its own what made the most sense.
Isn't granting the north patio to the restaurant totally in conflict with renting the other 800 square feet to someone else, because that was the entrance to the someone else?
Not at the time that they were having the negotiations. At the time that they were having the negotiations, it's undisputed that Mr. Mazza was considering leasing that 800 square feet of north interior space to a jewelry company. And that jewelry company had absolutely no use for that northern...
But it blocks the entrance to the store. I mean, granted, they wouldn't display jewelry on it, but in order to serve food out there, you'd have to fence it first, or to serve alcohol, I understand, you'd have to fence it. Wouldn't that deny access to the 800 square feet?
No, because there's a way that you could have done it so that you could have still allowed access. That the actual north patio is 900 square feet. It's bigger than the interior. It's bigger than the interior of the northern portion that was leased. So if you think about the size of a 900 square foot north patio, that is the essential billboard for the entire building. No one is going to voluntarily give that up without having a discussion, because indeed that was one of the things that Mr. Becknell saw when he first walked on. I mean, it's right on the corner, the busiest intersection of downtown Aspen.
But the entrance to their restaurant is down the street, around the corner, down the street.
Yes. It's just around the corner. It's not that far.
Did the contract here reference the sublease with that other tenant?
The sublease, during negotiations, Colorado State House was aware that they were negotiating with another tenant potentially for that interior space. That other tenant, which ultimately became Royal Lease, the execution of their of their lease was contingent upon the prior execution of.
But that's their lease.
That's their.
This lease did not reference it.
No.
So would it, is there any relevance to even looking at that other lease or the other tenant?
Only if you're looking at whether the court had clear and indubitable evidence of mutual.
Mutual mistake.
Because what Mr. Mazza, if you look to the Exhibit A that's attached to the Royal Street lease, it's almost identical. It doesn't have a north patio on it either. And when asked point blank, what provided Royal Street the north patio, which everybody says that they have, it's provided in the text of paragraph 3. Apparently, it's perfectly clear for Royal Street, but somehow ambiguous for us.
Ms. Hopping, I do have a question back to the provisions of the sublease with Steakhouse. And that is, what is there any relevance to the that both in Exhibit A and in paragraph 3, there's a reference to the Galena Street side? Because both of those are congruent with one another, and I believe the trial court relied on that as evidence of an ambiguity on the north patio. So can you explain to me if there's any relevance to that language?
Only to the extent that, I mean, that it doesn't create an inconsistency. If something is provided both in the text and in Exhibit A, that doesn't create an inconsistency between the two, and the provisions of the contract can still be reconciled. But also, I think, you know, if you look at that Exhibit A, there was handwritten by Mr. Mazza the yes, and that east facing patio was sort of cut off of that as well, but not as much as the north facing patio, which doesn't have any depiction at all. And so, I mean, to the extent that, you know, that would create an ambiguity, and didn't create an ambiguity in the minds of Colorado Steakhouse or my clients in terms of what they were provided. And if they were given something twice, then they were given it twice as opposed to just once. So I'm going to reserve the remaining portions of my time. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Matthew Ferguson, and I'll be arguing for Appellee Galena Corner, LLC. I'll jump right into some of the questions that Jeff Furman asked Ms. Hopping, and that was whether the word also was a stopper or was somehow put an end to the case. I'll give you two or three or even four reasons why it does not. Number one, there cannot be any exclusive use or north patio with this configuration. The only exclusive use that could be would be for the south patio, because as Judge Roy pointed out, that's where the entrance, or that's near where the entrance was that Judge Roy was talking about. The exclusive use was impossible because the plaintiff or Colorado Steakhouse knew that the 800 square feet in the front and its front entrance would always be there. And in fact, if the trial evidence was that they were expanding the windows so you could see in there and whatnot. Number two, when you look very carefully at the language of this Exhibit 3, paragraph 3, it says that Exhibit A is the floor plans and it relates to levels. And you remember, Judge Furman, that Mr. Becknell talked about the big differences he saw between site plans and floor plans and how he was a big developer and knew the difference, and he made a big deal there. The bottom line is that was the floor plans, and it talks about the levels, and that's where you see the yeses and nos, and that's why Mr. Mazza said the outside. Now, the other reason is that the east side is included in that also language, and it's not included, and it's also included as Judge Lynch pointed out, the trial court judge indicated that she saw that word east was both in the Exhibit A and on the and in the language, the last sentence following the word also. Your Honor, it is disputed that the diagram Exhibit A does not include any north patio. It does. In fact, Mr. Becknell admitted that. He said probably half or a third of it is on that document. And so
Is there a no somewhere designated?
There is no. There is absolutely no.
Well, then, I mean, I'm just reading the contract. See Exhibit A, which gives a floor plan of the lease premises on three levels. But then it says tenants shall also have exclusive. In addition, if you accept also in the plain meaning, have exclusive use of the north-facing patio.
Yeah, and Your Honor, what you're talking about now, this whole argument that we've been focusing on, is about whether the judge properly found there was an ambiguity.
Right.
If we haven't got to reformation and whatnot. When the judge, in the totality of the situation here, which was the extrinsic evidence, we believe that the judge...
Well, we're not going to extrinsic evidence yet. I'm just reading these terms on their face.
Your Honor, there was clearly, and this is a textbook issue, in this case, we have the actual evidence of the Scrivener's error. We have the conduct of the
party. Well, I'm not going to extrinsic evidence. I'm looking at just the terms. That's what we're supposed to do here. So
that's akin to going to the clerk and giving them $20 and they give you change for $50. That is a mistake. That's why we're here. Exhibit A is in conflict when you look at it, however you look at it. When you look at it, clearly Mr. Mazza and the landlord was marking yes on the areas of the floor plans that they were going to get.
And no, areas not.
And no.
You don't need an ambiguity to get to mistake, do you? You can have a mutual mistake without an ambiguity.
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Yes.
So where's the mutuality of the mistake?
Your Honor.
What mistake did Colorado Steakhouse make?
Your Honor, what we have here is we have an obvious Scrivener's error. We have a mistake that's proven, and they're related. The ambiguity and the mutual mistake are clearly related. And the case law talks about the interrelatedness of the two concepts. The mistake was that, and here the judge did let extrinsic evidence in, was that you had, for the first thing that happened was you had the same patio allegedly or purportedly leased to two entities.
No, but Colorado Steakhouse didn't know that.
Yes, they did, Your Honor. and if you look at the trial, if you look at the evidence, you'll see the pictures in October of 2006, I believe, where they have these large, huge bears being put on that patio, and you see the sofa being moved in. So everybody knew, and imagine that, you're renting a property, the highest rents in Aspen, and you see your north patio being utilized by the art gallery, and nothing was said for 7 or 8 months.
Counsel, wasn't the lease between Colorado Steakhouse and Galena executed in September, 1 month before you're talking about these bronze statues?
Partially, Your Honor, it was amended. I wanted to bring up with Judge Furman also. It was amended, and they do both the amendment, I believe, is Exhibit 5 or 4. But so both were amended. But yes, the main body of the Steakhouse lease was signed. Addendums came later, and the guarantees came later. So yes,
the south patio is a large patio. I don't know how many square feet it is. It's a large patio, and it's equipped with restaurant equipment.
Yes, Your Honor.
And it's always been used as part of the restaurant. Why isn't that some evidence of confusion or ambiguity?
Well, that is. I mean, Your Honor, the question you asked, and I'm coming back to it, was why wasn't the Steakhouse confused? Well, they're operating allegedly under the theory that they had the north patio all along. Your Honor, every mutual mistake case that we see reported in these briefs and that you'll report on, that you'll decide in this case, is presumably one side saying there wasn't a mutual mistake. We're right. That's why you're in this courthouse. And in this case, you have to look at the totality of this mutual mistake. The bottom line is that even when the trial judge looked at all the extrinsic evidence, that she found that there was no support in the only thing that Bednell said, he said, and the judge says this twice in her decision, that he was told by Mr. Mazza he could put tables on the front patio. That's twice in the trial court's decision. That's not a lease. Neither is, rather than the Steakhouse saying it was included, it was specifically included, as Judge Furman points out, there's a mistake, also in the north. But rather than saying that Mr. Mazza said it wasn't included, they say, well, he did specifically exclude it. That was looked at, and the judge found that Mr. Becknell was the only witness that was able to so testify. Mr. Mazza said categorically it was not going to go to him. The broker, his broker, said he didn't remember. Mr. Becknell, this wasn't there. Ms. Setterfield said what was included, but didn't recall one way or the other.
Was there a yes on the south patio?
There was a yes in the south patio.
In Exhibit A.
In Exhibit A.
So there's no question the Steakhouse got the south patio.
They got it and they used it.
Under Exhibit A and under the description in paragraph 3.
Yes, Your Honor.
So then this whole sentence. That's what bothers me is it's a whole sentence. that says you shall also have this, the north patio.
Yes.
It's not just a word.
Who was Galena's manager? What was his name?
Galena's manager member was Mr. Mazza.
Yeah. Now, this was his testimony on cross-examination. Is it your opinion that Exhibit A is controlling? It's my opinion that the totality of the lease is what it is. Paragraph 3 and the exhibit, yes. Question, okay, so it's your opinion then that Exhibit A can be read then with the text of the paragraph? Of course, okay. And the text of the paragraph includes both the north-facing patio? It does. And it also references Exhibit A? It does.
Yes.
How is that a mutual mistake? Or I mean, that seems to go the other way. I'm confused here.
Well, Your Honor, you again.
I mean, it says what it says, and you agree that ambiguity and mutual mistake go hand in hand at times. And I'm.
Yes, I do.
And so that seems somewhat clear to me.
What seems clear, Your Honor? That.
Well, the paragraph includes north-facing patio.
And that's why we're here, Your Honor.
Well, it is clear that there was a unilateral mistake.
There was that
on behalf of Galena.
There would be a unilateral mistake to get though, but it.
Because that's what you're saying, and you're saying it's a scrivener's error. You had an inexperienced typist or whatever prepare this contract. Fine. Where's the mutuality of the mistake? That's what I'm confused about.
Well, Your Honor, the mutuality was that they had Exhibit A. It's fast immediately while Mr. Becknell is literally in the air to his attorney because he has to leave for Tanzania and the Soviet Union at that time, or maybe it was Russia at the time, and it's sent to him, and he says he sees it. And nothing was raised for 7 or 8 months after that. And so Exhibit A was the deal points. It says this is going to, our lease has to cover the deal points. Exhibit A came within hours of Mr. Becknell leaving the town of Aspen or city of Aspen, and that, and I said yes, no, and yes, whatever. So the mistake was right from the get-go. Now, what they want to do in here with the clear evidence of the scripture's error, they want one person wants to get out of this lease. As we point out, I'm not against that. And how easy is it for someone to say, oh, wait a second, it wasn't my mistake 7 months after the fact or a year after the fact? It was a mutual mistake.
Well, now, there were winter months in there. Isn't that what they said?
They said
they wouldn't use a patio during the winter.
Your Honor, in September, when the architect came out to lay out the restaurant, nothing was put in the south patio, on the north patio. You do not get two liquor licenses for one premises. You get it once. They didn't get a liquor license for the north patio. They didn't even try. The testimony was that they would try to get it. Recall, Your Honor, the critical piece of evidence was 15 that we found from Texas, and that was the piece of evidence that says by a member of the Colorado Steakhouse, a member said to his general manager, would you go and negotiate with Royal Street Gallery in the front and see if you can get the front? If we get the front, we will have the best place in town. Your Honor, the evidence, mutual mistake can't be defeated because one party says, no, I knew it all along. I knew that I gave you $50 when you knew they didn't give you $20, when you only gave me $20 in that cashier example, which is not a great example. But there was clearly a mutual mistake. That contract, we have, how rare is it in this day of typewriters and redlining, Wanda, do you actually have the person's north and south being found and being produced here? So there was a mutual mistake. Your Honors, the trial court clearly used it clearly and convinced, I'm going to move on unless someone has other questions on that. The trial court clearly knew the clear and convincing standard, which is reasonably certain or more certain than not. And she uses a couple times the word most. Most is a superlative. Most probably the interpretation.
It seems to me you're transposing preponderance of the evidence and clear and convincing evidence when you say it's probable.
I am not. The defendant, my client in the case, and the plaintiff urged it. The defendant said, yes, even if it is, that's the standard, we need it. Clear and convincing, in Black's Law Dictionary is, I don't have it right here in front of me, but it's more certain or highly probable.
Highly probable.
Highly probable, Your Honor. And the judge used the word most on two occasions. She heard this evidence. That standard, the reason we don't have an attack on the reformation remedy itself is because that's abuse of discretion. So what the plaintiff is doing here, the appellant, is saying, listen, the judge, when we parsed and the decision of the trial court, she couldn't have used clear and convincing. She did. She mentions the right cases. She states the principle of law. She explains ad nauseum, not ad nauseum, but quite, she twice goes through all the testimony of all the witnesses and says that that it was the most certain, most likely interpretation was they'd never intended this. This South Dakota County to go, Your Honor. It is, I had the same conundrum when I faced the trial court, and when I talked to you today. There is a mistake in there. We contend it's a mutual mistake. The court found that. This court can only overturn the trial court if it's convinced that there's nothing in the record to show there was a mutual mistake. The court determined that. The issue of the ambiguity is a de novo issue for contract interpretation, but the standard for the mutual mistake is quite different.
When you say mutual mistake, is it an issue of fact?
Issue of fact, clearly erroneous, yes, Your Honor. Yes, that's what the case law says. And again, the evidence was, we had 3 days of trial, we had numerous witnesses, and we had over 100 exhibits. The last thing I want to point to is that the suggestion that the extrinsic evidence was let in at an ad hoc basis. If you look at the trial manager in this case, in the brief, the plaintiff stipulated to all the exhibits. All this extrinsic evidence, there was no objections to extrinsic evidence. The trial went forward because they were trying to get the remedy of rescission and termination of lease, which the judge denied in the early part of her decision. So we would debate strenuously the fact that there was an ad hoc mistake by the judge to letting extrinsic evidence. It was from the get-go, both sides stipulated to it. So, Your Honors, we'd ask the court to affirm there's two issues been raised here. They say there's no ambiguity. We say yes, and they say that no reformation is proper here, and we say yes, that should be affirmed. So those two questions should be answered in the affirmative, and the trial court's decision affirmed. Thank you.
Either one will do, though, won't it?
Yes, probably. Yeah, well, it's certainly the ambiguity and the judge's finding on that would negate the claims brought by the plaintiff. I haven't thought through whether or not the
stake would.
Yes, I haven't thought that through. Thank you, Rex.
Thank you, Your Honors. It's difficult for counsel for Galena to answer questions about reconciling the terms of the sublease, because the terms of the sublease are clear. Tenant shall also have exclusive use of the north-facing patio. That was a provision that was inserted by Mr. Mazza, the principal for Galena. He's an attorney. He's a licensed attorney. The south patio and the interesting
point. Does that make him more credible?
It makes him understand the nature of the right is right and the implications that you need to get it right. The south patio, the point about the south patio always being used for a restaurant is an important point. The south patio was historically used for a patio for a restaurant. The east facing side and the north facing side had not been, which was all the reason why it was necessary to be more clear, more explicit about how the north facing patio and the east facing patio intended to be used. It makes sense that they would put that in actual writing in the text if you think about the historic use of the south facing patio and what the north facing patio and east facing patio had been used before.
Well, counsel, is that something we can look to when we're deciding whether there's an ambiguity in the contract?
I'm sorry, ma'am?
Is that something that we can look to when we're deciding whether there's an ambiguity in the contract?
Yes, I still maintain that that the court is obligated to reconcile all the provisions of the contract and make an effort to read them consistent with each other before looking to extrinsic evidence. In the event that the court were to look to extrinsic evidence after a determination of ambiguity, then the court would be entitled to look to extrinsic evidence and history of usage. And as to the issue of mutual mistake, and I'll just address this quickly while I have a few moments, the issue of mutual mistake, the trial court took great care in recounting the one and only meeting in which the parties discussed use of the north patio. That meeting where Mr. Bucknell was present present, Mr. Parker was present, the architect Matt Mars was present, Mr. Mazza, his real estate attorney Karen Sutterfield, Bob Langley, Colorado Steakhouse's real estate, they all walked around. And the court recounted what each party heard. As to the discussion regarding the inclusion of the north patio, the trial court acknowledged that Mr. Becknell and Mr. Mazza's testimony were completely inconsistent, that Mr. Becknell wanted it and thought that it was included, that Mr. Mazza stated that if the interior portion were to be leased, then that north patio would be excluded. Because they completely were opposed to each other, their testimony, the trial court looked to the testimony of all the other parties that were present. And the court was very careful in recounting the fact that every other party only heard discussion about whether or not the north patio was included. And that's important because in order to get reformation through mutual mistake, there has to be a prior agreement to which the contract can be reformed. If the parties haven't actually agreed on what would happen to the north facing patio if the interior portion were to be leased to a different party, then there's no reformation that can take place because there's no agreement between the parties that the north patio would be excluded. We don't know what would have occurred if Mr. Mazza had clearly communicated his intent to exclude the north patio. The fact is that he didn't. He didn't do it verbally and he didn't do it in writing. Nobody else heard him do it and nobody else read it. My time is up.
I thank both counsel for their briefs and argument. The case will be deemed submitted and a written opinion will issue in due course.